This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Monday, March 18th, 2013. State lawmakers are a little more than halfway through the legislative session, and there's been no shortage of drama and divisive issues. Benta Berkland takes stock of what's happened so far and what's ahead as part of our Capital Conversation series.
I'm here with Ivan Moreno with the Associated Press and Tim Hoover with the Denver Post. We've had a lot of big issues already come through this session. Ivan, you know, what's your sense of how things are going and how would you describe the session so far?
It's been very fast-paced. There have been a lot of big issues that last year dominated a lot of the debate that have already cleared both chambers and are awaiting the governor's signature, and that's the tuition bill for illegal immigrants to lower tuition rates for them, allow them to go to college paying the in-state rates, and also civil unions, which has been one of the most emotional, most contentious topics the last three sessions, also has already cleared both chambers and is waiting the governor's signature. We've had a lot of gun legislation also has already been debated, like limiting ammunition magazine sizes.
And Tim, I know you've covered several sessions. Why do you think this is a session that has so many big issues, like Ivan was mentioning, and we'll preview a little bit later in this discussion some of the issues still coming up?
Well, some of it is just because a lot of the issues had kind of accumulated and were in a sort of a holding pattern, if you will. So civil unions didn't pass under the Republican House. And there were several other issues that are just sort of timely. Voters passed Amendment 64. Lawmakers have to deal with it, that kind of thing. But a lot of it is just the fact that Democrats now, they scored really impressive, pretty victorious wins in the 2012 cycle. And they are gambling that they're going to hold on to this. And stuff that they're doing is not an overreach. We had, of course, Aurora and Sandy Hook, and so they've used that as a license, if you will, to pass a comprehensive gun package. Anyway, so some of it's timing, and a lot of it is just the fact that Democrats believe that they have really solid majorities and that they're going to be able to keep them. And so for that reason, we have a landmark session that we're covering.
And it's not like we're at the end of the session. We still have a lot of issues coming up. Tim mentioned Amendment 64. They have to craft regulations for a whole new industry in the state. Ivan, touch on some of the other big issues they'll be grappling with.
Well, marijuana is definitely a big one. We're expecting discussion over whether to repeal the death penalty. And there's going to be issues around fracking and local versus state control and how to regulate that booming industry. And we are still waiting for the budget, which we will see and be covering in the next couple of weeks. So, you know, there's still a lot left to be covering, and including an overhaul of the state's decades-old school finance act system, which could result ultimately in voters deciding whether to fund a tax increase to implement this new system.
Tim, you mentioned this being a very epic session, divisive issues, complex issues, and issues that the public really cares about, and Democrats pushing this stuff through. It seems like the agenda is coming from Democratic lawmakers and not the governor. Is that your sense?
Oh, yeah. The governor would probably much prefer that it not be so epic, because now he's going to be faced with signing or vetoing, potentially, a lot of huge issues that had never come close to his desk in the prior 2 years under a divided legislature.
Thanks. That was Tim Hoover with the Denver Post and Ivan Moreno with the Associated Press. I'm Benta Berkland, and this is Capital Conversation.
The Daily Sentinel reports that thousands of gallons of an unidentified natural gas liquid are leaking from the ground about 4 miles north of Parachute. The contamination was first discovered March 8th when Williams, the leading natural gas producer in western Colorado's Piance Basin, was doing trenching work to locate underground pipelines. Williams is preparing for construction of a new cryogenic gas processing plant in the area. A spokesman for Williams said the liquid is seeping underground and vacuum trucks are being used to remove it. Todd Hartman, speaking for the Colorado Department of Natural Resources, said that as of Friday, about 37 barrels of liquid had been removed. That's about 1,550 gallons. Additionally, he said about 21 barrels of emulsion, basically a hydrocarbon water mix, have been removed as well, along with 288 barrels of contaminated groundwater. According to Williams, The fluid is some sort of natural gas hydrocarbon. David Ludlam, executive director of the West Slope Colorado Oil and Gas Association, said it appears to be something lighter than oil, and both confirmed on Saturday that the leak continues but has diminished. Representatives with the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission and Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment have been on the site and overseeing the response to it, including trying to determine the source and extent of the contamination. The Environmental Protection Agency also has assessed the situation. Colorado Division of Natural Resources Hartman said there's no indication that Parachute Creek is affected. He said the state issued a cease and desist order against Williams and WPX Energy, which owns the property. According to Hartman, both companies properly notified authorities of the situation. Dan LaRue, water operator for the town of Parachute, said the town gets its municipal water from the Colorado River upstream of Parachute Creek. Its irrigation water comes from the creek, but this year's irrigation season has yet to begin. What am I trying to say there? Last week on I See Change at thealmanac.org, everyone was commenting on the advent of spring. Jeff noted his maple tree blooming and bees buzzing. Michael saw his first meadowlark of the season. Amber crushed her first mosquito. And Marilyn reported her first leopard frog. Spring is busting out all over, and that includes lambs, calves, and kids. Marty Derlin reports on one new family.
Emily Hartnett lives on Garvin Mesa with her chickens, goats, and cats. It's a rustic life that begins by dawn and ends late in the day. On Friday, one of her six goats, Alba, gave birth to two male kids. Instead of choosing the soft, protected place Emily had prepared for her, Alba opted instead to deliver next to an old tractor embedded in the dirt in the middle of the goat yard. When we arrived several hours afterward, Mama and Babes were still getting acquainted.
That noise that she's making is very specific. I mean, she only makes that noise for her babies. And like, that's how you can kind of tell if they're going to give birth soon, if they start making that noise.
But, that little...
Yep. That's the mama noise. I've read all these very interesting articles about the sounds that the babies make with their moms and the moms make with their babies. And that they have, like, accents. And that, like, a mom will remember her baby, even if they've been separated for, like, a year. Each, like, mom-baby pair, like, has these different accents.
The view from the farm is awesome, and the animals are beautiful. But Emily's small goat operation is demanding, and it costs money. This year it was tough to get the hay she wanted, and the price was high.
I like to have third cutting alfalfa that has the highest protein, and it's so expensive. Yeah, it's stressful. But I made it through. I bought a bunch, and I have enough, so I just had to do it. Hopefully this year it'll be cheaper again, back down to what it was. $5 for a bale. A bale's like 80 pounds, a standard size bale. And this year I got some hay for $8 or $9 a bale. So almost double what it usually is, and not as good quality. But just because it didn't rain, I think there's a lot of nutriment in the rain that's not in the irrigation water. The six for the winter, I went through between a bale a day and a bale in like three feedings. In like a day and a half.
And although she was able to purchase local hay, Emily couldn't find the organic grain she wanted here.
I actually had to go to the San Luis Valley to get...
What kind of grain are you buying?
Wheat. I bought wheat. But I like to buy barley and triticale. Last year, you know, just not having a lot of water was stressful, but things seemed to survive. It seems like a pretty... good spring coming.
protected by the bulk of the tractor, and trading occasional communications, the goats rested, the black and the fawn with their mother, who seemed finally to settle down after the rigors of giving birth. The wind whipped up the mesa, and Emily mused about how fast the kids progressed.
2 or 3 days, they're just jumping off of everything. So crazy. That's great. Yeah, and it's neat to see them just when they're first born, they have this instinct to, like, nuzzle to find the teat to get to the milk they need to drink right away. And it's just so neat to see them just, like, just blindly kind of, like, budding her body with their, you know, like, with their front noses, and they're, like, budding on her neck, and no, and then they finally find it. And it's just neat that they have that instinct to get up and nurse as soon as possible.
For ICChangeAtTheAlmanac.org and KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
There's still time to view the Sandhill Cranes, stopping over at Fruit Growers Reservoir and the Escalante Wildlife Area. Evelyn Horn reported 36 cranes on Friday, 33 on Saturday, and 40 at the reservoir last night. Thanks to Evelyn and Andrea Robinsong for reporting on the cranes. And thanks to all of you who take the time to report at thealmanac.org. Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.